Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast and Packs What She Said. We are doing a little bit of a crossover episode today. I'm your host, Andy Herman, but we have two more hosts today, Maggie Loney, Perry Goldstein. You guys, it is so great to be chatting with both of you. Maggie, it has been ridiculously forever since we've had the opportunity to chat, which is unacceptable. First of all, I am so glad for a variety of different reasons. One, just because I enjoy talking to both of you, but two, because I feel like I need a little positivity in my life following that very brutal Saturday preseason game. So nobody better to talk to than both of you. Perry, Maggie, I'm glad you guys are doing well, but tell us A, how you're doing, and B, tell us a little bit about Pax, what she said as well.
Oh yeah, we're good. We're happy to be here. We love Pack-A-Day. Pack's What She Said is back. We were on maternity leave,
and by collectively we, together.
Collectively, the show was on maternity leave. And like I said, by we I mean Maggie. But now we are back with our regular schedule. We'll be weekly leading up to the season, and then once the season starts, we will be back for our preview and post game shows. So the typical cadence that you can expect from us. I cannot believe that it's 3 weeks until the start of the season, give or take. So we will be talking some real Packers football. Not that preseason isn't real, but some games with stakes very soon.
Much better than the alternative of preseason football for sure, especially after this past week. But Maggie, how are you doing?
Yeah, you kind of put a lot of pressure on us because you said we had to be optimistic and
you don't have to be.
Provide a refreshing and positive take. And my notes are not the most optimistic and positive, but I'm sure that in true Pax What She Said fashion, we'll find some very positive things to say as we get rolling.
Let me rephrase. I don't need you to be positive about the Packers. I just needed two people that I could count on, two good friends to come on and cheer me up a little bit. And getting to talk Packers with you two is going to cheer me up a little bit, even if you depress me for the next 45 minutes with very harsh Packer takes. So you still have very much the right to do that if that's what you want to do. Let's start, however, with a little bit of a positive. Let's start in that direction. Was there any positive standout player, key takeaway, anything that you could sink your teeth into and be like, okay, at least there was this one thing? I'll let either of you start. Just please give me something.
Well, my standout player, I don't know if this is like a collective, was Colby Wooden.
Okay.
I thought for a player who is potentially at risk of losing his spot at the bottom of the D-line depth chart, I thought he had a very nice night, and I thought he looked bigger. Like, maybe that's just because football hasn't been on TV, you know, but he seemed bigger on the broadcast and he seemed like he had really good energy, and he was always around the football. His nose was there. So to me, that he was my arrow pointing up guy, and it was cool to see because he deserves it. And he just graduated, which was very cool. I saw the Packers did that celebration for him to get his diploma. So a very good week for Colby.
On a day where a lot of players did not do anything to help their cause to potentially make the team, he was one of the few that absolutely did. He put on weight this offseason to play a little bit more nose tackle along with the three technique as well. I think it was a very wise move. It's not exactly Bo Melton moving from wide receiver to corner, but I do think it was a very important position change for him. He's really owned it so far, and I thought that was a really great first step for him, and hopefully, again, having the opportunity to make the team and maybe even be more of an impactful player moving forward for Green Bay. Harry, who do you got?
I actually had a few guys.
Go for
that
it.
I thought had good games, but actually my biggest takeaway, look, it was not fun to watch. for a team that has a lot of spots up for grabs, all those spots still up for grabs. But I thought the Packers like ran the ball really well. I didn't think it mattered like who was in at back necessarily. I mean, we can talk about some of the offensive linemen, but generally who was in an offensive line, like they were still able to move the ball on the ground. Obviously their only touchdown was also on the ground. So Not the maybe the greatest takeaway, considering that was like the one thing the offense did exceptionally well last season. But good to see that that will probably still be the case.
just to your point, if I would have told you last night, or just in general in week one of preseason, that they went 21 for 124 in a touchdown, I felt pretty darn good about probably how that game went overall for Green Bay. It didn't go that way. And a lot of that heavy lifting was done by Amar Johnson on 7 for 67 and a touchdown. But even though Chris Brooks' stats aren't going to look gaudy at 5 for 17, I thought he ran the ball very, very physical. I liked what he did inside. Jalen White had 2 for 16. Malik Willis had a 5-yard rush. Bonaconda had a little bit of a tougher time sledding. But overall, the run game, specifically with Amar Johnson, I did think performed at least good, well enough. It just everything else did not, basically.
Well, they also had a few like really nice runs that got called back because of penalties. Good so point. If you're looking at like simply the run game, I mean, in any game, like those will not count, right? But I was looking more at like what are these guys doing well? And so sure. I think if you included those, that would probably add at least another like, I don't know, 25 yards to that. Total.
At minimum. Yeah. Cause there were a couple of runs that looked that they were going to be pretty nice runs that just of course got called back because that's the type of night that it was, except when Adrian Cooper had a very blatant, you know, double hold and trip on one of the very first drives. And of course could not get a holding penalty on that particular play, but no need to be bitter about a week one preseason game, I guess. any other standout players for either of you before we, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, again, the offensive line was on like both ends of the spectrum for me, but my standouts were, I guess, tied, but just the left side of the line. Like I thought Jordan Morgan and Anthony Belton looked really good. They played limited snaps, but I don't think either of them let up a pressure, or if it was, it was like one between the two of them. And for a first round pick who you like really hope is going to play, and you know, left tackle is not like a lock in my opinion. I know people are very high on Rashid Walker, but I think if Jordan Morgan looks like a kind of a lockdown guy in this preseason, like he could give Rashid a run for his money. So he could be trade bait. Maggie and I have talked about that offline, Rashid Walker. So I thought it was nice to see A, the first round pick, and B, the guy you just paid to come in, like paid a lot of money for, look the part.
I'm going to go with a couple other ones. I, first of all, this is kind of copying you a little bit, Perry, for sure. But I do want to specifically shout out Amar Johnson as well. I thought he was definitely one of the bright spots. And no breaking news here. He had the touchdown. He had the biggest play of the day. But just, again, you see his physicality and the size that he has. But he's also got that great speed. He bounced off of that one tackle and then was able to take it to the corner. Shout out Sean Clifford as well for his biggest play of the day, the block on that run. But I thought still he looked good. In very limited time, but he made the most of it. And then Baron Sorrell as well, for a player that for me personally in camp has been very difficult to gauge where he has been at. Like certain plays, it looks like he's there, and then other times there just hasn't been a whole heck of a lot. Kind of had a very rookie Kingsley and Igbari sort of feel to it, of like there's some there, but it's not going to be super impactful from day one. There might be some plays here there. But I thought last night he looked really good, again, in limited action. But overall, I was pretty excited about that as well. So my two takeaways or my standout players in this case were Amar Johnson and Baron Sorrell.
Yeah, I did think it's funny because as I was watching the edge rushers, there were times where it felt like Brenton Cox was like the leader in the clubhouse to be edge three. And then Igbari would have a couple nice plays, and Sorrell was getting a ton of love on the broadcast, and I thought he had a really nice showing for his like debut. So I know that you don't want to be relying on necessarily your undrafted edge pieces to come in and have like a really big role like a Brenton Cox, but I did think that all three of those guys had really nice nights behind Rashawn and LVN, and felt like Aaron Mosby was kind of falling behind in that a little bit.
But totally agree with that. And I thought Enigbari had a nice night as well. So a good showing overall for the defensive ends and for those guys that are trying to battle for not maybe as much roster spots as definitely just the pecking order behind Elvian and Gary. I thought those three at least made it very interesting for what that's going to look like moving forward. All right, of course, that we got, now that we got the good news out of the way and some of the players that actually did play well and that we had some positives for, this doesn't have to be a player, but I'm really curious for you guys, what pissed you off the most about this game? Whether it was you're frustrated by, disappointed by, what as you were watching this game were just like, I can't do this right now?
I mean,
you go.
I think it kind of ties into what we were talking about earlier with the players that had really nice nights. I think Matthew Golden deserves a little bit of a shout out for this, just because it was the drops, right? It was the consistent things that we've seen the Packers repeatedly struggle with, that you're like, okay, they have an entire offseason, they have an entire offseason program, and then they have training camp, and you're expecting some of these wrongs to be righted in an entire, I don't know, 6-month cycle or however long they've had to kind of work on some of these issues. So for guys that normally have really reliable hands like Romeo Doubs to come out and everybody to just make their quarterbacks look so much worse during the preseason, it was tough to see, because you know, it was something they struggled with last season, had like the most dropped catchable balls in the NFL. And then to come do it again in week one of the preseason. Yes, of course, it's week one. And that's what the preseason is for, is overreactions. But it's certainly something you would have hoped for guys that are trying desperately to make the bottom of the roster, that they would have fixed up a little bit.
Perry?
That's exactly what I had written down. Also, I have exactly verbatim, why so many drops? !! It's frustrating to watch, because it also makes it extremely hard to evaluate anybody if you're not moving the ball and you're punting consistently on offense. I mean, for me, the point of the preseason is twofold, right? It is to individually evaluate players and where they fall on your roster / if they fall on your roster, period. And like, get your sea legs under you, like get the team like ready for the regular season, right? Shake the rust off, etc. So part of me wants to be like, all right, we're shaking the rust off. But the other half of me is like, this is a problem that we consistently saw last season as well. And we just hope maybe that it will get course corrected before the season starts. Otherwise, I'm not gonna overreact about a preseason game, for sure. Like I said, I view preseason like there are no stakes. This is not a real game. Everyone is doing their vanilla offense, their vanilla defense. It is about those two things that I just mentioned. So I'm just gonna hope that the drops were shaking the rust off.
I hope so too. You know, also, you know, Heath and Melton were definitely a good chunk of that, and they shouldn't see a ton of time regardless, unless again there's injuries. There's a lot of wide receivers that are ahead of them throughout the pecking order in that room. I know Doubs had one, maybe two, depending on how you view it as well. But I have not seen that level of drops in camp so far this year. Hopefully that is not indicative of what this team is moving forward. I talked about this a little bit on Sunday's pod, but I'll just kind of repeat it here. I thought there were two things that were kind of themes of this team this offseason. The first, Matt said it on the very first day, as he said, like what he wanted to accomplish. He really wanted attention to detail. He wanted the little things. It was the little things that were ultimately going to be what made this team great. Like those were the little things that you had to put the work into. And then I also thought there's been this sort of theme of adding some physicality and intensity into this team. I'll even take it one step further. The very first thing that Brian Gutekunst said when he was at, like, to kick off the offseason, basically, we've all talked about it a million times, was urgency. So what, pick your through line of which three of those that you want to look at: urgency, attention to detail, physicality. 0-for-3 in the first preseason game. And if those are going to be your themes, if those are going to be the things that you are really hyper focused on as a team, that you really want to make sure that you are doing well, to have you go 0-for-3 in your very first preseason showing in a pretty ridiculous fashion. Like the attention to detail, we heard it from Matt today again, of like offensive linemen that were fanning out to players on blitz pickups that they weren't supposed to do. And just a lot of these little nuances, the drops are definitely a part of that as well. The holding penalties, guys not being where they're supposed to be. That's all attention to detail. I thought the Jets were the more physical team, and I definitely did not feel like anybody, especially even those that were fighting tooth and nail for roster spots, had any level of urgency in that game. So to me, that's what I was most disappointed by. I will say it again. They could have lost this game 1-0. It does not change my view on the outcome of what this team is going to look like in the regular season, the postseason, etc. But if you're talking about the three things that are going to be your culture setters for what you're trying to accomplish in camp, a pretty embarrassing start for those three particular things.
And I think kind of piggybacking off of the urgency and the attention to detail, I guess nobody mentioned it specifically, but the penalties, it was astronomical. You know, my dad would be texting me and he'd be like, boy, what's going on? The, just another drop. And then like, as he was texting me that, there would be another drop. And then he'd be like, boy, they can't get anything going with all these penalties. There'd be another penalty, and, you know, or vice versa. And he'd be like, is your stream faster than mine? And it's like, no, it's just, this is just repeatedly happening for some of these players. And I know we'll talk about some of them individually, but a really just tough night for, like you said, that attention to detail element, where historically, you know, this is an area where, maybe not last season, but the Packers, you know, you've relied on them in some of these moments to play really clean football. And I don't know if you shake it off now so that week one, everything is nice and crisp and you don't have some of that rust, like Perry said, but it just felt like there was a lot to clean up from this one. And I don't remember Matt LaFleur's teams having this sloppy of a preseason performance.
Denver last year was close, but this one might have even been a little bit sloppier.
Yeah,
it's at least in the conversation. What I really wanted to do, we may have spoiled a couple of these already through our conversations thus far, but that's totally fine. I kind of took 10 just things that I have seen sort of smattered around the internet and plastered about the comment sections / social media, which is all very indicative of course, what's actually going on with the team. But I wanted to take 10 of those things. Some of them are good. Some of them are bad. And just kind of get your feel of if these narratives are fact or if they're fiction, if they are overreactions or if they're fair sort of indictments or criticisms or just truth of what this team is. So you guys ready for my 10 random things that I stole from the internet to kind of go over? All right, let's do it.
Let's do it.
Number one, like anyone can go in any direction. Saturday's preseason game was indicative of the same issues and failures that we've seen of Matt LaFleur's Packers teams in the past. Fact or fiction?
Well, I mean, I think we just talked about how we've seen some of these repeated during the regular season. I don't know. I think the word that gets me, not to be like nitpicky of the words, but is indicative. Like, am I putting that much stock in this? Like what's the weight of which I view this? Am I going to feel differently if all three games look like this? So I'm a hesitant fact, which like, yeah, I mean, we did see some things crop up, but like, am I like, this is an indictment on this team? Not necessarily.
Okay. Maggie?
Historical fiction. I'm just kidding. I don't know. I mean, like, I think that, like Perry said, the language is very strong. And I'm really excited to continue this exercise because it was really hard to tell on social media if it was satire or if people were genuinely overreacting this strongly to the preseason game.
I think it was genuine. So, I really, and again, it's probably, you know, I think it was genuine.
So that, I mean, I think that colors things too, is depending on how you look at it. Yes, are these things that should be cleaned up? Yes, but is that exactly what the preseason is for? Yes. So I guess fiction, where it'll be cleaned up.
I'm very much with Perry in the fact that I think it's fact that we saw all the same things that have been failures in some huge moments, including last season, did show and sort of rear their ugly heads in this game. I do not think it's predictive of what's going to happen for this team moving forward. I do think we saw, and I think why there was so much anger and vitriol and just over what I still think is overreaction is because for most people, even us three are in a very unique thing where we're like watching this team like a hawk, you know, day in and day out through everything. Right. And for me, I'm very much in the fact of I get to go to rookie mini camps and OTAs and training camp and family night every day. So this is not like the first time I'm getting to see the 2025 Green Bay Packers. For the vast majority of people, the last time they did or saw or whatever, anything with the Green Bay Packers was three consecutive losses to Minnesota, Chicago, and Philly, where we saw a lot of the mistakes. And their first introduction to the 2025 Green Bay Packers was this, which was really crappy to watch. There's no two ways about it. There's not a lot of positives to take away. We went over the ones we could as best as possible, but that was a pretty ugly performance overall. So I think when you see that, that's why people are so upset, is because you saw it last year. Then like that, it's almost like that mind thing where it like just kind of closes the gap on you and automatically, and you're just kind of connecting the dots where there, nothing else happened in between. And now all of a sudden we fast forwarded to preseason and all, it's the same stuff again. I don't think that's predictive. I do think that's why people were so upset. It's because the same themes that eliminated this team the last time they saw them play were the exact same themes that were so ugly in this particular performance. Totally. If that makes sense.
No, totally. Yeah.
All right. Number two, the issues in Saturday's game are a preview of what's to come in the 2025 season. So I think we're all on the same page on this one. Maggie, I'll let you kind of say what you were just saying and kind of go in that same direction.
I just don't want to be the first Packers wide receiver to drop a pass in week one of the regular season. I'm just going to say that.
Especially at home. At home, like if there's an early drop in that game, the boos might get very loud very fast. But yeah, it will not be pretty. We'll be right back. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Now, preseason football is already underway and college football is here, so do not miss any of the action this season on Prize Picks. An absolute blast winning last year on Prize Picks, and now I'm gearing up for another epic run in 2025. I've already got a couple deep sleepers in mind, and I'm going to be very, very high on Tucker Kraft this upcoming season as well. Now, you may be new to Prize Picks, so let's break it down super easy. Prize Picks is incredibly simple to play. You just pick more or less on 2-6 player stat projections, and if you get your picks right, you could cash in and win up to 2,000 times your money. That's why Prize Picks already has millions of users, because it's the best place to win cash while watching sports. And there's never been a better time to sign up than today. So download the Prize Picks app today using code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. And don't forget that code PACKADAY. Prize Picks. Run your game.
But I think it's... Does this preseason game show you exactly where you still need to work? Yes. Is that unfortunately exactly where you left going into the offseason needing to work? Yes. So, I mean, I guess bonus points for not having new issues crop up that you have to fix, but is it kind of concerning that it's the same issues? Yeah, probably something to continue working on in these last two games. And like I said, I think it'll be cleaned up by week one, but I don't want to be the poor guy that goes out there and makes the first blunder for this poor team.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Perry?
I don't. Look, like, we saw the starters together for, what, 3 series? Like, less than that? It was 3 series that Jordan was out there with his ones. Like, none of these guys have played together in months. I mean, you're practicing together, but it's a new starting five. It's a new wide receiver. Do you want to look better than that? Yeah, 100%. Do I think that over the course of an entire game, if we got Jordan Love and his guys, that they would continue to look like that? No. And that's what the season is going to be. It's going to be the starters actually out there for a full game. So I cannot extrapolate this performance to the season when the bulk of the time... And I said this at home today, and now I feel like I have to caveat it with no shade, but like the bulk of the time spent of this game were guys who are fighting for their spot, right? Like that's the point of the preseason, is to iron out the depth, figure out like some up for grabs roster spots. So 3 quarters is going to be like guys that you respectfully hope are not starting games for you. So yeah, I mean, no, this is not what the season is going to look like.
I'm right there with you.
They come out very harsh. I didn't mean it to. I just like you cannot extrapolate from this to the real season.
We're in lockstep. Again, it means nothing moving forward. These games, again, they're not real football. I talked about this on a live chat that I just did, but if you were to take like the pie chart of like what real football is, and it's like the real football is like 100%, like preseason's like 5% of that pie chart of like what it actually is. Like it's so much different.
Also, like you're not getting the full offense. Like, no, Malafour's not nothing calling close to his it. Good stuff. Like, nobody is trying to show any real tape. It's just, to your point, Andy, it's such a fine line to get what you need to out of the preseason without it actually impacting the real season. Like, they're actually trying to not have it bleed over while getting some like useful, valuable information out of it. That's how I view preseason games. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's why I don't like put this on like to week one.
This was a tweet from Kirk Benkert, former Packers quarterback, of course. He said, quote, the tough part about watching Packers preseason football is that the philosophy is running base generic plays with zero help scheme-wise. There's nothing to actually help the offensive players have an advantage like they would in a normal game. It makes it hard to evaluate. Meanwhile, there's other teams that are absolutely dialing it up and airing it out with different splits, motions, everything. It's just like playing two different games, and it's a complete waste of time philosophically, in my opinion. There you go. That's from Kirk Benkert, former Green Bay Packer. I don't think it's, again, indicative of anything that's going to come this upcoming season. Even if the Packers go out to have like a 4-13 season, something terrible, I don't think this would have been like, oh, we should have known from that very first preseason game. It'll be its own set of issues that hopefully we do not have to deal with. All right. Number three, Matt LaFleur cannot get his team prepared for games and he should be on the hot seat. True or false?
Are people actually saying this?
Oh, very much so. Very, very much
over
so.
Over a preseason game?
I got my first Fire LaFleur tweet 4 minutes into the first preseason game this season. So, yeah, we're definitely there.
Yeah, we got to take a beat. Like,
I'll take this one. This is from Bill Huber's offseason article.
I think you're saying Bill Huber's the one that said Matt LaFleur's on the hot seat.
Yeah, this is from Bill Huber. He said, screw Matt LaFleur, fire this guy. I mean, no, I'm just kidding. He did not say that. This is from his article in the offseason. Of 204 coaches in NFL history with at least 50 games on the ledger, LaFleur ranks 13th all time with a 670 winning percentage. Of the 12 coaches ahead of LaFleur, 8 are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. LaFleur's winning percentage is better than that of Hall of Famer Tony Dungy and future Hall of Famers Andy Reid and Bill Belichick. With a 67-33 record, he's 34 games above 500. That's tied with Hall of Famer Hank Stram and ahead of Hall of Famers Bill Walsh and Marv Levy, among many others. So the answer is no. Matt LaFleur would have to have a very catastrophic season to get canned or anything like that. If it was a situation where you know, everyone's healthy and they have a very bad season, yeah, he's on the hot seat. No question about it at that point in time. Things would have to get so catastrophically bad for there to be a termination or for it to be like in the ether. Like, I just hope Packers fans realize, like, we should not even be remotely wanting any, because if Matt LaFleur is gone or like there are serious hints of like, is he going to be back or not? We're talking about like a 4-13 season, maybe 5-12, maybe worse, maybe 3-14. And it would be a very, very brutal 2025. So nobody should be having their fingers crossed that LaFleur is on the hot seat this upcoming year, because it would be a very frustrating 2025 to say the least.
I just think people do not give him the credit that he deserves. And I don't know if it's because like national media don't really recognize him, or like if we just have like these crazy expectations that don't exist, but like Matt LaFleur is a very, very good head coach. He is, like you just said, one of the best. And football is a very difficult sport. So to have a winning record like that, like, yes, we have had some tough playoff losses, but like, come on.
He would have his choice of whatever open position that there was.
He would probably create some openings. Sincerely,
I'm totally with you. Mm-hmm. All right. I think Maggie, anything to add, or are we all in lockstep on that one? Do you want him fired?
The only thing I was going to say is I think that he's just in a really delicate position where, like Perry said, he doesn't get the credit he deserves because he's always a reflection of someone else. First, it was Aaron Rodgers that made him this way. And then, you know, it was like, what's he going to do with Jordan Love? And, oh, well, he has a really good supporting cast now. And it always felt like he would like clear the bar and then somebody would move the goalposts again. So and then, you know, if we're seeing any sense of struggle, like even minute little struggles, it's like, oh, well, there you go. It just feels like Matt LaFleur has like this really high bar to clear for some people. And there's always an excuse why he's like players are making him look better than he is, or, you know, he can't get his guys ready to play if there's something that happens on the field that he can't control.
Yeah. So like when they're doing well, it's not credit to him, but when they're doing poorly, it is a credit.
It's his fault. Yeah.
And I do think this is like classic, like coach and quarterback and some GM as well, of like when things are good, they do get, but to your point, like Matt doesn't seem to get the credit when things do go well. So I do think it is a little bit different for sure. I definitely do not think he's got the credit that he's deserved over the course of his career so far. I think he would also be the probably the first to tell you that he understands what the expectations are in Green Bay. And he understands that a part of this is comes with the gig. And now it's still up to him to go out and win that Super Bowl and put his name up on that list of, hey, it's great to have the regular winning percentage, but you have to add that trophy to your name as well. And hopefully you can go out and do that and then kind of just shut up everyone, which would be, you know, on that specific topic would be nice. All right. Next, number four, the depth, especially on the offensive line, is a bigger concern than anticipated.
I say fiction to this.
Okay.
And I say that because, you know, Rashid Walker wasn't playing, like Perry said. We don't know what that the severity of that really is at this point. But your starters, theoretically, are Rashid Walker, Aaron Banks, Elton Jenkins. You've got Sean Ryan in there, and then Zach Tom. You've got Anthony Belton, who comes in and could play either interior guard spot. We saw him play a lot of right tackle in the preseason game. So you've got potentially a backup swing tackle there. That is six for you. I know that I thought Monk had a really difficult night, and I think that's upcoming, so I don't want to get too deep into that. But I thought Donovan Jennings had a really, really nice night as another, you know, depth piece. So looking
at Jordan Morgan.
Yeah, absolutely. And he, you know, again, he could be the right guard. He could be left tackle. He's immediately in there. So you're talking about seven guys that are really talented football players that potentially could be starters elsewhere. Like if Rashid Walker were to win the left tackle job, teams would want a guy like Jordan Morgan to start for them if he didn't win the right guard job. So I think you've got six or probably seven starters already on your offensive line. So if your offensive line number eight, you know, is in his first preseason game, how often do you have three backup offensive linemen starting multiple games for you? And I know that does happen. You know, you pay these guys for a reason, but I think the depth is actually better than it's getting credit for.
Okay. Perry.
I just realized that I mixed up Anthony Belton and Aaron Banks. And like, I'm going to ask them earlier, I'm going to ask them to please stop getting guys with the same initials. thanks. But I stand by what I said about the way Anthony Belton played. I'm with Maggie. I don't know that I have too much to add. I think when you have enough guys that you can slot in multiple positions to start and like look like they could play, then that's, I mean, I don't know how much more you could ask for. I think here's my question is like, if Jacob Monk had not had as bad of a night as he did, would we be asking this question? Like, is he the only one that had like the tough night? And then therefore we are just projecting him onto the rest of the depth. It feels like a reaction to that. Yeah.
All right, I'm going to say, Maggie, I think you actually talked me into this one. I was going to go with, I do think it is slightly a bigger concern. I think you bring up the really great point of, listen, go canvas the league and see if they can get to their number eight offensive lineman before having concern. Literally 32 out of 32 teams at this point, basically, if you get to your eighth offensive lineman and have concern, you are just another team in the NFL. It's really difficult to have that level of depth. And I will actually say two of the bright spots I thought overall in this game were Jordan Morgan and Anthony Belton. I know Anthony Belton made some mistakes too, but the mistakes are coachable. The stuff that he actually showed from a physical standpoint and even some of the footwork, just being a little bit quicker than I anticipated, I thought that was actually gave me a little bit more confidence. So if you're talking about just the top seven guys, I think we're right where we were. I do think Monk had a really rough game, and then combined with Travis Glover being out for the season and then Kadeem Telford having a really rough camp so far. Jennings has been solid at guard, but when he's moonlighted as a center, it's been really ugly. Really, really ugly. So there's just a few things with some of the injuries and Monk having a bad game that I thought actually like 8, 9, and 10, even that was going to be like, oh, there's some possibilities here that one of these guys, if not two of these guys, could potentially take that next step and maybe even be a guy that you could potentially trust. And I'm not sure I'm there. And then with John Williams not playing a single snap yet and looking like it's probably going to remain that way, just a little bit more disappointing than maybe that bottom portion I thought was going to be.
I thought Travis Glover was a roster lock, you know, and I think that kind of furthers your point too, that you're looking at a really solid depth piece that now the Packers don't have. So that would have put you down to even like O-line 9, right? Like you're talking about the last lineman potentially to make the roster. And now you're looking at 2 with him missing.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. All right, number 5. It's a preseason game and it means absolutely nothing. Because there's a lot of people that are saying that too. I've frankly said that. A couple of us at least have said it as well. But it's a preseason game. It means absolutely nothing. We shouldn't put any stock into what we saw.
Not nothing, but I definitely lean closer to this one for sure. I think I've said why. You can't say nothing, right? Like they play these for a reason. Coaches look for things within these games for a reason. These guys have the opportunity to step up and like take, you know, change the narrative around whether they deserve a roster spot or not in these games. So they mean some, if they mean something to the players and the coaches, like they mean something, period. I just don't think like these big picture statements are like match what these games mean.
Fair. I don't know how long it was at this point, 5-6 years ago, when I interviewed Justin McCray for Cheesehead TV, I asked him this actually when he was fighting for a roster spot. I said, what matters more to players? Is it having a really good training camp or a really good preseason? And he said, it depends who you're playing for. He said, if you're playing to make the team that you are on, the training camp is what matters the most. But if you are playing to audition for the rest of the league, knowing you might not make it on your initial 53, then the preseason matters more. So to Perry's point, you know, like what she said earlier, the preseason might not matter as much to Jordan Love or Tucker Kraft. The preseason matters a hell of a lot more to Jacob Monk, you know, because if he doesn't feel like he's now a lock to make the Packers 53, well, the audition he put out on Saturday is not what he wants the rest of the league to see. But if you're somebody like Donovan Jennings, who had a really nice night at offensive line, and you're like, well, I don't know if I'm, you know, there might be too much depth here in Green Bay, but if I don't want to go back to their practice squad, there is a team out there that could potentially sign me to their initial 53 to be their O-line 7. So I think that is kind of how you answer that without answering it.
I love how literal, especially that Perry is on this one, and you're not wrong. So is the preseason game? It's a preseason game, but it means absolutely nothing. Perry, you are correct. That is false. It means something. What I will add on this is that the loss by 20 points in this case to the Jets means absolutely nothing. There are takeaways. There are things to improve upon. There are things that you learned from this game. There are evaluations that you got. Those things all have value. So the preseason game, it meant something. You got something out of it. The actual loss by 20 or whatever means absolutely nothing in the long scheme of things. I will put it that way. That's fair. Yeah. All right. Number 6. It's good that they got punched in the mouth now to learn from the mistakes before it actually matters. True or false?
I think you can't say that the preseason doesn't matter and then say it was good that they got punched in the mouth before it matters. Does that make sense? Like you can't say it that does. The punch matters.
You can't have the benefit without the downside. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a fair answer.
Is it getting punched in the mouth though to like lose? Like, to lose 20, what is it, 20 to 3? No, they scored.
30 to 10.
Okay, whatever. 30 to 10. I'm not gonna lie, I stopped halfway through the fourth quarter.
You're the smart one of us.
But like, sorry, I should not admit that. But like, if we don't, if the fact that the score doesn't matter, how much they lost by doesn't matter, that's not what we're looking for, then like you can't say they got punched in the mouth. Then you can comment on the urgency, which we have, right? Like you do not want to come out looking like that, period, whatever game it is. But punched in the mouth seems dramatic to me.
I think there's a modicum of truth, and just like, I guess I'd rather have it happen now than in the postseason. I think your logic is sound, Maggie, in that like you can't have it both ways. You can't have your cake and eat it too. It can't mean nothing, but also you get something out of it. But I think that's exactly what coaches do. Like, I think they understand that they like didn't exactly scheme this up or do the right thing, mm-hmm. but they're damn well going to use it as motivation this upcoming week as you get ready for, you know, Indianapolis and joint practices and just resetting the tone and things like that. So I actually don't hate that this happened overall and that it was the first preseason game. I think the coaches can spin this one to get something out of it, even if, again, there maybe wasn't that other side of it. So I'm going to say there is a level of truth to it, and we can agree to disagree, which is very, very okay as well. All right. Mecole Hardman lost himself a job in this game. True or false?
Okay. Of all the takes, this is the first one that I'm like, that's a fair take to make.
Okay.
Like Mecole Hardman was not signed as a roster lock. He was signed as a low risk, potential high reward. But if it turns into nothing, it doesn't really matter. That's what signing this was. He has bounced around. He's contributed to other teams, but he's also been cut by other teams for various reasons, including the Jets, which I heard like that was his former team. And he did not have a good performance. Like, you are looking for, we added you on this like tiny little deal to see if you can have some level of like value and benefit to us. And if they don't see that, then they're not going to keep him. They have enough wide receivers in that room. Yep. Like, you are fighting a crowded room. You muff a punt. So you're brought in to do kick return, like special teams, you muff a punt, you drop a very easy, like wide open pass. So what were you brought here to do? Obviously, if he has two more games where things turn around, then that like changes things. But if this is like what he is, then no. I mean, he's probably not going to make the team.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there were certainly opportunities for him to showcase why he deserved to be wide receiver six, and they fell flat, right? I mean, Christian Watson obviously is not playing. Jayden Reed wasn't playing. Savion Williams wasn't playing. Dontavian Wicks wasn't playing. And yes, those four guys are making the team. Maybe, you know, Christian Watson starting on pop, but those are four roster locks. So then you've got Dobbs and you've got Matthew Golden. Like, you're talking about, you know, maybe the very last slot. Like Perry said, you're brought in to play special teams. You muff that opportunity. And like Abanaconda played really well on special teams, I thought. He had some really nice returns for some nice chunks of yardage. So if there's like a player they're taking a flyer on to fill that special teams role, I think at this point it goes to a running back depth piece before it would go to like a seventh wide receiver.
Sure. I don't think he lost it quite yet. I think he still has a chance, but man, he did not do himself any favors and definitely put himself well behind the eight ball to the point where like he might need that Desmond Howard punt return for a touchdown in a game or like something that shows of like, all right, we can't cut this guy. So I don't think he quite lost it yet, but I definitely think he's made it so that he has to get himself back in good graces and definitely overcome a very abysmal performance in this game.
Yeah.
All right. Easy enough. Number eight, Isaiah Simmons and Jacob Monk should not be locks to make the roster. We'll be right back.
I'm just genuinely curious, like if either of you had Isaiah Simmons from the beginning as a roster, like Jacob Monk, I thought he would be like O-line seven on the depth chart. And I still think he makes the roster, but I do think that he had a really tough night. And, you know, I'd be curious to go back and rewatch and see if more of those struggles came at guard and he felt more comfortable at center, but I know he did have another penalty when he was at center. So I don't think I ever had Isaiah Simmons like penciled in to be a roster lock. To me, it was always Jacob Monk. Simmons, I thought, was like a fun piece for the Jeff Hafley defense, but I don't think yesterday really changed too much for me.
Okay. Fun aside really quick here. This is my May 20th list of roster locks. I'm going to see if there's anyone. First of all, I did not have either Isaiah Simmons or Jacob Monk at that time as a roster lock, but I'm going to see if there's anyone that you would now say is no longer a lock to make the roster from this list that I had. So I had, all right, Jordan Love, Malik Willis, Josh Jacobs, Marshawn Lloyd, Dobbs, Golden, Reed, Savion Williams, Dontavian Wicks, and then Christian Watson on the PUP, Tucker Kraft and Luke Musgrave, Walker, Banks, Jenkins, Ryan, Tom, Morgan, and Belton, the seven top offensive linemen. Only three defensive linemen, defensive tackles, Kenny Clark, Devontae Wyatt, and Carl Brooks. Rashawn Gary, LVN, Baron Sorrell, and Colin Oliver at edge. Edgerrin Cooper, Quay Walker, Isaiah McDuffie, Tyron Hopper at linebacker. Nixon, Hobbs, and Valentine at corner. McKinney, Williams, and Bullard at safety. McManus, Whalen, and Orzik on special teams. I had 38 total. Is there any one of those 38 that were roster locks at the time that you think would not be a roster lock now? I have two potentially.
I have more that I think are making this roster.
That's fair. I think you could probably add more locks onto it. Yes. But
like Colby Wooden and Brenton Cox, I would like,
I don't know that I would put either as locks yet. I don't know that I would put either of them on that list yet. Good bets maybe, but I don't think I'd put either as locks yet, but they've been playing well, to be fair.
But I guess to the point of this question, like, no, like if I don't think either of these guys were ever or are still locks to make this roster, it's perfectly reasonable. We are still in the realm of they can make the team. And I'd be like, yeah, sure. That makes sense. But to Maggie's point, like, were they ever? It sounds like no. So
the only player from your list that I my ears perked up a little bit was Colin Oliver. And he's somebody that I'm super, super excited about. But it's just, you know, he's a fifth round pick and he hasn't gotten to play yet. He didn't play yesterday. So, you know, I don't think, given his pedigree, that he would be somebody that they would cut. But he was the only name from your list that I was like, you know, that one stuck to me a little bit.
Colin Oliver, just because of the injury situation. The only other one I would maybe take off, or at least like slightly be intrigued by, is Carl Brooks. If you told me there was a world in which Clark, Wyatt, Wooden, Brinson, and Stackhouse were the five, I think they would probably trade Brooks in that instance. I think they would have trade value in him. But if you told me there was one, like a world in which those five made it, like Brooks has not done much in camp. I loved him 2 years ago. I thought he was this really fun rookie. I didn't think he did quite as much a year ago. He's been extremely quiet in camp so far. I haven't watched him obviously on the all 22 in that first preseason game. I still think he makes the team. Don't get me wrong, but I think if there was one there, I would maybe take off the locks list. That might be the other one. All right. But going back to the two players we were talking about, I don't think either of them are locks. I did get to the point like coming in where Josh Jacobs called him a unicorn and Xavier McKinney said something to the effect of like, he's going to have a major role in this defense, meaning again, Isaiah Simmons here. And I think he is pretty close to a lock on like from a special team standpoint. He was the top gunner on the punt team. I still think Isaiah Simmons is making this team, but I don't know if, as we're sitting here today on August 10th recording this, I would put either in the lock category. And to maybe both your points, maybe neither of them ever should have been.
Well, I think, I mean, my question, I just view these two very differently. Like Jacob Monk is a depth piece. He was, even if he was ever a lock to make this roster, he was never a lock to start, right? So the expectations on him, I think, are very different from Isaiah Simmons. Isaiah Simmons he's what, 27 now? This is his third team. He was taken in the first round and never lived up to the expectations that you like expect from a first round linebacker. I feel like this feels like his, maybe it's dramatic. You tell me if you think this is like hot takey, but like last chance really to show that like I deserve to be a starter in this league.
Starter, just contributor on defense. I think he's done enough on special teams that he's probably just going to get looks, and he's so freaking fast and talented that it wouldn't surprise me if like over the next couple of years, he just was like a number, like had a very,
Eric, I mean, on defense. I mean like starting linebacker.
Yes.
Like playing the position that he was drafted to play.
Fair.
So the bar is just so different for the two of these guys. Like if you're looking at Isaiah Simmons, like, are you contributing as a linebacker in this defense on a consistent basis? Yes or no. Like, do we trust you to sub in, with, like, if Quay goes down, that's a different story and question to me than like, is Jacob Monk worth the eighth like offensive line spot?
Yep.
I think that's well said. Anything to add, Maggie?
No, I was just thinking that, you know, with Isaiah Simmons, I think he's in a unique spot because I think his role could kind of change a little bit. And I know he talked about coming in and being more excited to play inside linebacker and not have to be that like hybrid tweener mm-hmm. between safety and linebacker. We saw him rush a little bit yesterday, which I thought was kind of fun. Some looks off the edge, just given his body type and his speed. But I do think he's in a unique situation where pending injuries like Zane Anderson getting hurt in the preseason, depending on what that looks like, I don't think he would want to kind of revert back to a safety role, but you wonder if that would increase his value, especially on special teams. If somebody, not that Zane Anderson was a roster lock, but if you lose some of those core pieces, then I think that does increase his likelihood even further of sticking.
Yeah, I think it's going to just be interesting for both these players. If I were betting today, I bet both of them make the team. But again, probably neither of them locks, and both of them have a little bit of work to do over the course of the next couple preseason games and the rest of training camp for sure. Two last ones. I think both of them are going to be relatively quick. Number nine, injuries are getting extremely concerning. Perry's going to take the extremely of this very, very literally. I can already tell.
Yeah, okay, whatever. I mean, are they concerning? Of course. You never want to go into the season with as many players that are injured. I'm kind of in, I don't know what it was about seeing Jaden Reed in the boot, that's what set me over the edge. If you had asked me like pre this game, I would have been like, yeah, but I think like, you know, guys are going to come back and blah, blah, blah. And it sounds like Jaden Reed's going to be there week one. There was just some like kind of visceral reaction in my soul to seeing Jaden Reed in the booth. I was just like, oh, okay. Now it's like reaching that threshold.
Maggie?
I mean, I think it, again, like not that you want any certain position or player to get injured, but you know, Corey Ballantyne coming in and getting hurt, it stinks for him because he genuinely felt like he had a path to the roster. He was already on the roster last season, and you know, the cornerback room, the depth there is not necessarily incredible. Some of the guys have been having rough camp. So I think from that aspect, it's tough to see these guys get hurt. Just mentioned Zane Anderson, obviously, but I don't know, you know, like Perry said, that I would call it concerning yet to the point that, you know, we think the starters outside of those we already knew about, like Christian Watson's not going to play week one. We knew that, but the guys that we expect to play should be out there and healthy.
The quantity is getting slightly concerning to me of just like, there's a lot of guys that are now have some ailment, injury, some guys who haven't, like Colin Oliver and John Williams, who have not even practiced yet. They're just starting to get in when you get into the, you know, Dontavian Wicks, Jaden Reed, we already know Watson's not playing, Xavier McKinney, Nate Hobbs, and having the surgery, like even if it's preventative, they're starting to get a lot of variables out there that I'm starting to feel more and more, or I guess I should say less and less comfortable with. And that's where I'm at. As of right now, like the only kind of players that we know are out for week one are Christian Watson and Travis Glover. And it probably is seeming like John Williams is probably in that conversation as well. Not that it matters a ton. But like outside of that, there's nobody that we have any real confirmation on that is in real danger or for sure is going to miss week one. And so I'm buoyed by that. I am having a little bit of confidence overall in that. If we start getting more of these and we get into start being like, yeah, like some of the key starters are going to be missing against Detroit. And then you have a game 4 days after that against Washington. Now I start getting a little concerned very quickly, but I'm hopeful right now that it's mostly going to be players that are just missing the rest of camp and preseason and not actually going into week one.
Yeah.
All right. Last but not least, the big one. Amar Johnson put himself in contention for a roster spot with his performance on Saturday.
Yeah. I think absolutely. Like there's always like a preseason darling, and you can make the case that he is starting his campaign to be this season's preseason darling, because we know, unfortunately for Marshawn Lloyd, that he's just continuing to deal with injuries. He didn't get to play and put tape out there. The Packers, I think to your point earlier, Andy, you mentioned like Chris Brooks seems like a roster lock. That's how he feels. He played pretty well. Emmanuel Wilson had a nice season last year as the tandem, the Josh Jacobs, but I wouldn't call him a roster lock. He wasn't on your list of roster locks. And then you've got like Jaylen White, Israel Abanaconda, like you mentioned earlier, that is more of a special teamer who's looking to get some opportunities. At this point, it wouldn't shock me if the Packers take an extra running back over a sixth wide receiver to start the season. And I think Johnson could be why they do that.
Okay. I just really like the words that you said, starting his campaign. I think that, that's perfectly said of, I don't know if I'm quite there yet, but it does feel like this was the kickoff of his campaign of like, hey, this is who I am. You're going to start to take notice. And now if he follows it up with a couple more games like that, all right, you've piqued my interest. You have my attention. But I think this is the start of that campaign.
I mean, we've most recently seen like an undrafted guy kind of show himself in preseason in Emmanuel Wilson and then get signed to the roster and then like get called up, I guess, the first year. And then he was brought onto the active 53. And it was just this like really beautiful, amazing thing, because that's like I've said 100 times on this episode, it feels like, but like that's what preseason is for, is to like let these guys have their opportunity to shine and see who kind of like stands out in their, when they're given their moment. If you guys are Hamilton fans, like, I'm not throwing away my shot. Like,
I love Kyle Hamilton, a huge fan of Kyle Hamilton, one of the best safeties in the league.
No, the Broadway show.
I know. Why?
That's what, well, Andy ruined it, but that's the song that I think of for this. Like this is your shot. Don't throw it away. And yeah, he was that guy from this game.
It kind of sounds like Eminem's, like, you get one shot, one moment, this is your opportunity. Is this just basically, is Hamilton a remake of 8 Mile?
Yeah, actually, that's exactly what, that's exactly what the show is about, actually. Yes.
Yeah, it sounds incredible.
Totally.
I kind of like it, wish it was about Kyle Hamilton. That actually sounds very very kind of great as well.
Mina Kimes can write it, I think.
Oh yeah, she would be very good at that, no question. All right, that was the last one. I think we solved all of the Packers problems in one podcast here. At least got clarity on all of the 10 big talking points that have seemingly come out of this game. The biggest talking point that anyone is having right now is that Pax What She Said is back, which we all needed more of in our life. And I'm so excited for it, legitimately, not just saying that. Tell everyone again about Pax What She Said and where we can find you guys all season long.
Yeah, you can find us at PWSS Podcast on Twitter, at Pax What She Said on YouTube and Blue Sky. That's where we are going to post everything on YouTube. If you're watching this, please just, you know, hop on over to the Pax What She Said YouTube and give our video a thumbs up, even if you've already heard everything we have to say, because we appreciate it. But yeah.
Listen to it twice, actually, one on each channel. So if you're on Pax What She Said, listen to that, then come over, listen to it again. Just there could have been so many things that you missed throughout the course of it. So definitely a must do.
Leave it running in the background, actually, just, while you go about your day.
See if you hit play on both. See if you can get the play button on both simultaneously so that it plays at the exact same time.
Or do it in a round, maybe.
Oh, yeah. So that's like in like a chorus, like in Hamilton, like 8 Mile. All right. Any final Pax What She Said thoughts before we get out of here? Just, I mean, thoughts from the team of Pax What She Said is what I meant by that.
No, I think all of our thoughts have been spoken.
I think what I should try to do is write a screenplay of Hamilton based on what our conversation has been tonight and see how close I can get to the actual Hamilton screenplay.
I would love to see you try to write a historical rap.
I was a history major, Perry Goldstein.
And I would stand by that statement and say I would love to see you write a historical rap.
You know who I think should do it is Tom Grossi, who taught history to children.
There we go. The biggest thing I remember about Alexander Hamilton, or the only thing I remember anything about it, because wasn't that the thing with like Aaron Burr?
Didn't he play safety for the Ravens? That's what I remember.
That's, you're thinking of Alexander Madison, and he was a running back for the Vikings, is what you're thinking.
Right.
Yeah. All right. That's enough of us for everyone's sake at this point. Follow her at Perry_Goldstein, at Maggie Loney, right? But on Blue Sky, correct?
Maggie J. Loney.
Yeah, I got there eventually. At Andy Herman NFL, Blue Sky, or on Twitter. You're on Blue Sky as well, Perry Goldstein. Same handle on both?
Yeah.
All right. That's the way to do it. All right. Appreciate you guys. Thank you so much for doing this. Again, everyone check out Pax What She Said all season long. Packaday Podcast. Follow both of them. Like, subscribe, comment, give those 5-star reviews. We appreciate that a ton. I'll be back with Perry in a couple of weeks. Of course, I'll be back here tomorrow, and Pax, what she said, I'll be back very, very soon. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.